Welcome to the second season of Goals Do Come True, the show that takes a deep dive into the systems and processes that help turn your business goals into reality. Hosted by me, Doug Bennett, the Goals Guy. If you like what you hear today, please remember to share the love by liking, sharing, and reviewing the show. It helps spread the word to others looking for help with their goals. Anyway, let's crack on. So, hello everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Goals Do Come True with me, Doug Bennett. We're streaming live into Facebook. I have got Daniel Tolson with me. Just a couple of comments before we started. I thought we're going to have some fun here. I mean, the title, what I've told everybody it's going to be, is how AI can help identify and eliminate income-limiting beliefs. I like that, income-limiting, because it's always about self-limiting beliefs generally, but income-limiting beliefs is even better. That'll be one of the things that we touch on. No doubt we'll go off and meander and come back and all manner of stuff. But Daniel, thanks very much for joining me. I have no idea what time it is in whatever part of the world it is that you're in, but thank you for staying up late if you did that, or getting up early if you did that. And over to you. Tell us a little bit more about yourself, what you do, why you're here, how goals fit into your life, and then I'll keep chipping in and keep pulling out the nuggets.
Beautiful. Well, thanks for having me here. It's the afternoon here in Taiwan, so it's a perfect time. My son started school today, which was great. So this was his first day, and my daughter, she's been begging to go to school since 5:30 this morning. She woke up and said, "Dad, it's the first day back at school." I said, "Well, go back to bed. That's the first thing you need to do."
But getting kids excited about going to school, I mean, you know, that's seriously good parenting to start with, I would say.
Well, we have a different view on life, and one of the most important things for my children is that I build self-esteem and self-worth. And every day that I take my daughter to school, we do two things. Number one, we review her most important goal. And as soon as we leave the front door, the goal setting begins. And as soon as we reach the elevator and we go down to the first floor, we begin the affirmations. And that's how we start every day. And even during the school holidays, she wanted to know, "Dad, what's this month's affirmation? Dad, when can I do my goal setting?" So as part of what I do, I'm a big believer in goal setting. I believe that every generation also has to learn it, and we should be teaching our children what we've learned about it and a little bit more.
Oh my God, she's going to be awesome, as will your son, no doubt. I mean, they'll be shaking the world alight by the time they're ready. Well, an awesome way to start the day. And you're absolutely right in that respect. You know, goals and goal setting, it should be a fundamental part of education, really, for people. I think we could probably get rid of a great deal of mental health issues if we just instilled a few more goals into people. I don't know, that might be a broad statement, bold statement, but, you know, it's just a belief that I have.
Well, I think it's a true statement. There was some research that came out years ago, and it said that before our children turn 18, they've heard the word no more than 180,000 times. No, you can't go out with that boy. No, you can't buy that car. No, you can't go to that school. No, you can't watch that YouTube channel. No, you can't work at that job. And so children learn that defense mechanism, that they're going to ask for something and they're going to hear the word no. And as they become young adults, they don't so much fear rejection, they fear hearing the word no, which then triggers that fear. So I think what we have to do is we've got to change our language when we're talking to our children. And like my son today, he's just turned 6 and he's starting out with his first affirmation. That is, "I'm going to be a big success." And he says it out loud and he verbalizes it and he emotionalizes it. And as we go down the elevator, he says, "I'm going to be a big success. I'm going to be a big success." And I want him to think that way, that he can achieve anything. He can become anybody that he wants to become, to achieve any goal that he sets for himself. And as a father, I've also got to be mindful of saying the word, "No, you can't have that." It's more about, well, how could you have that? I think we've got to replace no for how.
You know, I'm almost getting a little bit teary, I'll be honest with you. You know, I can feel it just in the corner of my eye when, you know, listening to this and listening to you know, affirmations in a six-year-old. I mean, I can remember carrying around little 6x4 cards with I am and all the rest of it. And, you know, people would look at me as if I was some kind of Looney Tune. And it's just a shame. It's just a shame. Well, I mean, you know, I've got the right guy for the show today, which is seriously, seriously cool. But let's talk about your businesses and what you do. I mean, I've had a look on there and it's like you do help businesses get the right people in the right places and scale up and the like. And I think I have traditionally smaller business owners, you know, listening to the show. So, you know, any goal setting tips, type stuff that you can share with aspiring business owners?
100%. The thing that I do for my business owners is I know that they have a fear, and the fear is making a hiring mistake. It's the fear that they employ the wrong person. They welcome them into their business. They welcome into the family, and then they have this fear of being taken advantage of. And now that this person's in the business, I'm so afraid to let them go because I don't have somebody to replace them with. And so this business that they've dreamed about, they've hoped about, all of a sudden those dreams come crashing down with just one wrong employee. And even if you're starting to look for your first employee and you start to think like the big businesses know that one person, one bad egg in an organization can negatively impact the workflow of 300. So when it comes to building your business, you should have a goal to find the right person. You should have a long list of wants and desires. What are the characteristics I want in the ideal employee? What are the characteristics that I want? And then you should have a second list of all the things that I don't want. And then at least when you go out and you start to look in the market for a suitable candidate, you can have a look at your long list of wants and needs, and you can start to tick the box. And what will happen is you'll use both logic and emotion. Okay, I want this knowledge. I want this skill. I want these characteristics. And I want to avoid that. And if you can do that from the start, you'll reduce your hiring mistakes. And most businesses, about 66% of businesses hire the wrong people. And they have huge turnover. And most businesses are in excess of 30% turnover at the moment. But you've got to bring that number all the way down if you want to have a real profitable business.
Yeah.
So if you want to grow your business, set a goal to find the right employee and then take your time in the hiring process. The smartest business people, they all have a rule that they don't employ for 30 days. They find a potential candidate and then they sit on their hands. They bite their tongue. They keep their fingers off the keyboard and they wait. They wait and they wait and they wait and they make sure that they make a very good hiring choice.
Yeah.
And so that's what I encourage businesses to do.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that. I've got two support staff and a sales guy, and my two support staff have been with me for 6 and 7 years. And, you know, they are part of the family, and I did take the time and, you know, I give them a lot of autonomy. You know, I often use, look, I do not run an adult daycare center. I do not want to hear from you that you've got to pop out and take the kid, you know, pick up the kids from school because they've broken a finger or something like that. You know, I don't want to hear that. I know you're going to make up the time and all the other bits and pieces. I know you're going to do that. So, you know, just do it. Don't use up my time asking for permission. You've got blanket permission because I know, you know, and they always come good. They always come good in that respect. And that's because I took the time to hire correctly right at the beginning. So I'm totally 100% with you in that respect. And it is worth waiting. And it is the impossible thing is sitting on your hands and waiting for 30 days. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Because you're anxious to get somebody in to get them working on. But yeah, the turnover of business. I mean, that's, you know, that's the crazy thing. There are, you know, there's people there that just hire, and, you know, you're maybe paying recruitment costs every single time, and you're just wasting your time, you know. So yeah, take your time.
Well, if chicken has a brain the size of a pea, if it can have the discipline to sit on an egg for 21 days and make it hatch, I think us with our hundreds of millions of neural networks throughout our entire body, we can sit on our hands for 30 days.
We should be able to do that.
So you mentioned goals.
Mm.
And many years ago, I was working in corporate. I was living in Dubai and I'd found the field of coaching. And I had my main stream of income, and then I wanted to have my secondary stream of income. So I started to go down the goal setting process. And somebody said, Daniel, if you could wave a magic wand and achieve any goal that you wanted, what would you desire? And I said, well, I'd love to have a $1 million coaching business. And they said, well, go out and create it. So my first goal for my business was to have a $1 million income from my coaching business. And after a year of having that goal, it didn't happen. In the second year, it didn't happen. In the third year, it didn't happen. In the fourth year, it didn't happen. In the fifth year, it didn't happen. And what I realized was when I had that big goal, the goal was too big too soon. Mm-hmm. And it scared me. Mm-hmm. And I went into a self-sabotaging process because I knew that there had to be so many things happen before I got to $1 million. Yes. But I didn't have the necessary knowledge to earn $1 million. I didn't have the skill set to earn $1 million. I didn't even have the attitude or the right angle of approach to a $1 million business. So year after year after year, the goal just kept getting pushed back. But every year that I didn't achieve it, the self-esteem and the self-worth went down.
Yeah.
And so what I learned from that experience was that if you're in transition from your corporate career or you're working with a small business and you want to have your own business and you dream a big dream and you want to earn $1 million, the $1 million is possible, probably just not in the first year.
Yes.
You've got to make sure you set those goals strategically so that they have realistic time frames. So instead of setting yourself up for failure like I did, you start smaller and set yourself up for success. I think that's a much better way to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do recommend you cut your teeth on more modest goals, especially if you're brand new to goal setting. Because, you know, I'm a believer, you're a believer, that goals do come true. So it's difficult if you're brand new to it. And as you say, you know, if it's a side hustle that you're trying to create, then, you know, cut your teeth on some, you know, more modest goals to start with, just maybe even replacing the income or half of your income, you know, from your main job so that you can, you know, make that transition. Yeah. So I like that. And your brain obviously goes, you know, $1 million. Are you kidding? Right.
Who are you? Yeah. What are you thinking?
Who are you to think? You're not Mark Zuckerberg or, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. No, so it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense in that regard.
Now, there's so many things that have to happen. My mentor said to me, Daniel, you've got to become a thousandaire before you become a millionaire. And even before you become a thousandaire, you've got to become a hundredaire. And even if you earn your first dollar in business, don't laugh at a dollar. You should be proud of that first dollar because if you can earn $1, it proves that you can earn two. And if you can earn two, you can earn four. And you can just do very small doubles along the way. And you might be able to double your income. One of the things that I did was I looked at my hourly income and I said, okay, I'm earning $50 an hour. Fair play, doing good, enjoy what I do. What if I could get my side hustle income to $80 an hour? Like, what would that do for my life? And I really started to emotionalize that. What choices would I be able to have? Could I wear a different type of watch? Could I wear a different pair of shoes? Could I go on a more luxurious holiday if I got to $80 an hour? So I started to visualize that. I started to emotionalize it and started to get excited. And so then what I had to do was I had to step out of the comfort zone. So I said to my wife, I said, you know what? I'm going to charge $80 for an hour of coaching. I said, do you reckon I can do it? She says, absolutely. And only one person believed in me. The next person I met, I said, well, I charge $80 per hour for this. And they said, oh, that's dirt cheap. And so I got the shock of my life.
Yeah.
But then the next time what I did, I said it was $80 for 30 minutes. And then after that, I just put it up. I doubled it. And before I left my corporate job, I was earning $250 per hour on my side hustle. And so I knew at that stage, even if I just did 4 hours of coaching in 1 week, I could transition without having that fear of losing my financial stability.
Yes.
And then after I did that, doubled it again, and it actually gets easier. As you start to put your rates up, it gets easier because you've got more belief in yourself and you get better at what you do and you deliver a faster result. And everybody knows people value their time more than their money. And so the more you charge, the easier it actually gets. But you got to do those first small doubles at the start.
This is golden stuff. Thank you very much. I mean, this is going to make a huge difference to people listening here. I like it.
You know, I grew up and I had learning disabilities. And so I was told that you're learning disabled. And now you think, oh, shit, I can't learn. They're going to put my brain in a wheelchair. I'm going to wheel my brain around. And what I realized over time was that there was nothing wrong with me. I wasn't learning disabled. The teachers were teaching disabled. They had a teaching disability because from what I know, it's impossible not to learn. Your unconscious mind only needs to do something once and it will remember how to do it. But that doesn't necessarily mean all teachers are good teachers and know how to teach correctly. So I had to go on a journey and I had to find the right teachers for me.
Yeah.
And not everybody was the right teacher. And I found my mentors. I looked up to them and said, you know what? I can learn easily from this person.
Yeah.
And as I started to do that, I started to build that confidence.
Yeah.
And I realized there were some studies that came out of Stanford University, and they said that when you break success down, it's broken down into three core components. The first part is knowledge. And so you've got to have a basic level of knowledge in your field of expertise. After the knowledge, then you stack on the skill sets. But when you take the knowledge and the skill, that only contributes to 15% of your success, which leaves the third area, which is your attitude. Yeah. And your attitude is how you approach your career, how you approach your customer, how you approach the marketplace. And fully 85% of your success is going to come down to your attitude. And this is backed up with science. Daniel Goleman, who wrote the book Emotional IQ, says in the book, 58% of your success is going to come down to your levels of emotional intelligence. And he didn't mention in there you had to have a high IQ to be successful. In fact, people who have a higher IQ actually struggle with their success because they use their own intelligence against themselves. They might have developed this beautiful left brain, but the right brain is emotionally disabled.
Yeah.
And so we've got to make sure that we're developing the right skills, the right knowledge, and then you've got to have the right angle of approach. And once you develop that attitude, then really the limitations start to drop away really fast because the biggest limitations that we have are within ourselves. I used to tell myself, I'm learning disabled. I can't learn. And even at 30, I was still failing exams. 32, I'm still failing exams until I woke up one day and I said, this is a bullshit story.
Yeah, I've had enough of this.
Myself. Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. This isn't winning for me at all.
I think for a lot of people, Doug, they probably feel the same way. They say to themselves, the biggest obstacle is me. There's no government agency. There's no secret police standing there with a gun saying you can't succeed. And if you don't want to put a bullet in your brain, everybody knows there's nothing stopping them other than themselves. And if we can come to terms with that, then half the problem is solved.
Hello, I hope you don't mind me interrupting this episode. Just wanted to tell you about one of my other businesses, which is DB Wealth Planning and Preservation. We do cash flow modeling, lifestyle financial planning, and wills and trusts. So if that's something that's on your agenda, if you want to see what your future looks like well ahead of the game, then pop over to my website, dbwpp.co.uk, and we'll help you create your future and protect your assets. So that's dbwpp.co.uk. Anyway, let's go back to the podcast. No, you're absolutely right. My philosophy is, take I can't, just lose the apostrophe T and change it. I can, because if anybody else has done it, you can do it. You can just find the information from somewhere and just copy it and then just add your individual take on it just to make it that different, slightly different to everybody else's, because that's what people buy, is your difference rather than, your sameness in that regard. So okay, how can AI help me identify and eliminate income-limiting beliefs then?
Our biggest blessing was COVID. It's because pre-COVID, we could measure people's emotional intelligence, but most of the technology was what they call paper-based instruments. So you would log on to an internet site, there'd be a series of questions that you answer. And depending on how you felt that day would determine how you respond to the instrument. Some people have a very high ego and they look at all these scores and they say, that's me, that's me, that's me, that's me. But the research shows that 85% of people claim to be emotionally intelligent, but only 10 to 15% actually are. And so thanks to COVID, people weren't necessarily going out to see their therapist. They weren't going out to see their coaches. So the technology changed. And I came across a piece of technology that integrates voice recognition and artificial intelligence. And what we have the ability to do today is to do a non-biased recording of somebody's emotional intelligence, but to pick up their brain waves through the microphone.
Wow.
So today, it's as simple as doing a 90-second voice recording into your mobile phone, and then the AI technology measures those brainwave frequencies. And each of these frequencies, they can't be heard through the human ears. Mm-hmm. You can't see them through your eyes, but they can be measured through technology. For example, when you experience the emotion of love, you're resonating at a frequency of around about 700 hertz. When you're in a state of fear, you're resonating, your body resonates at a frequency of about 50 hertz, and the technology can pick this up. Now, hidden inside of those brain waves, the technology can pick up when you've had significant emotional events in the past, where these events have been, they come unannounced, they're dramatic, you feel isolated, there's no way to cope. And then the brain takes these painful memories and hides it out of your awareness. But in the technology, it picks up these brainwave frequencies and it measures these emotional frequencies in the voice. And it says something's happened here between the age of 0 and 5 years old. Another event's happened between 21 and 25. And so the technology enables us to pinpoint exactly where these emotions are hiding in the brain.
Wow. No, you know, my immediate thought is that's got to be impossible, but it obviously isn't, right? Okay. That's interesting.
About, you want to the internet.
Well, you want to play with this, don't you? You want to play with this.
You and I are on two opposite sides of the world. We can see each other. We can hear each other, but we can't see the internet working. We just trust in the process. It's like when we go for an x-ray. I was at the hospital the other day with my daughter. They take her into the room. They take an x-ray. I can't see those x-rays going through the air, but what I get is a printed report of the bones, and I can see the bones through the skin.
Yeah,
it's the same way. What happened pre-COVID was we used to be able to put like a halo around somebody's head, and you probably remember from 40 or 50 years ago, people sitting with a skull cap on and these electrodes. This technology isn't nothing new. It's just evolved because of COVID and because people couldn't go into the hospitals or to their psychologist. They said, well, how do we change this? And they said, well, we've got voice technology. We can record voices and we can adapt it with AI. And since we've done this, people have had profound awakenings, understanding who they are and why they think and feel the way that they do. It's really mind-blowing.
How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's cheap. People can start for like $97. It's cheaper than a trip to your local doctor.
Yes. Yeah.
And so in 90 seconds, we can produce a 14-page scientific report. We can have a look at how the left brain and the right brain is processing emotions. Sometimes the left brain isn't processing at all. Sometimes the right brain is over-processing the feelings. We can have a look at the different types of stress people have. Some people have emotional stress, which is really related to humans. And then we can have logical stress, which is really related to our career and money. And this is why we say we can have a look at different types of financial limiting beliefs. Because as a coach, for me, my style of stress is not logical stress. I don't think about money. I don't worry about money. I worry about people. Yeah. So by understanding that, I can say, well, my worry is coming from my team, from my customer, my family. But we get these very left-brained people, and all they think about all the time is my career. Am I going to get fired? Am I going to have a job next week? Am I going to be able to pay the bills? They're really good at getting along with people, and they never think about people problems. But once they start to identify that my stress comes from things like money and career, they narrow down on it immediately. They say that's exactly what goes through my brain. And some people who have overprocess or overthink the emotions, their left brain becomes really active. And these thoughts about money just go over and over and over and again in the head. I'm going to have to tighten the belt. I'm going to have to start to save, and I have to put some away from the rainy day. There's no tree out the back that grows money. There's the rich and the poor, the haves and the have-nots. The rich are getting richer. And this is what happens in their brain. And then you can start to look at their personality attributes. And some personality styles are more worried about money than others. You know, some people can be described as coming from the head. They always think about money. Mm-hmm. Other people come from the heart. They're more to do with relationships. Other people are more instinctive based, and they're more picking up on, you know, relationships. And so once we understand this, you can say, well, this is where your problem is coming from.
Yeah.
And that's definitely where the problem's not coming from.
Yeah.
So it gives you a really accurate diagnosis of what's happening in the brain.
Okay. And how can we access this thing?
Yeah. Go to my website, danieltolson.com, and have a look for Mind Report.
Okay. You shared with me the link.
Yes.
In the introduction. So yeah, we've got incomeunleashedformula.com/mindreport.
That's the one.
But we'll make sure that that's in the show notes and available, and I'll drop it in underneath the video as well so people can get into that quite quickly. I think that would be, well, it's $97, so it's less than 100 quid in the UK money. So I think the thing that piqued my interest was the knowing what stages of your life the potential things happened. And that's the thing, because obviously, you know, it's recording your voice.
No bias.
There's no bias. There's nothing. There's no, oh, he raised an eyebrow. You know, like you would, if you were sat opposite a psychic and they, you know, they were reading your twitches in your face and all the rest of it. And
I'm sensing an older woman in your life who's passed over. Is that from your mother or your father's side?
Yeah, exactly.
You know. I've got an old uncle coming through really strong. I smell tobacco. Who is the smoker? And I hear someone coughing.
Yeah, all of that stuff. But you don't get any of that with this. No.
I'll give you an example. One lady came to see us recently, and she's an engineer. So very, very left brain. All of her studies has to do with the left brain, and she gets to the stage of her life and she says, I really don't understand why I think and feel the way that I do, but I want to come to know my inner world. And so we did the voice recording, and this is interesting. The technology just doesn't measure from time of birth. It also measures the emotional frequencies from the time that you spent in your mother's womb from the third trimester.
Wow.
And the emotions had peaked significantly during that time that she was in her mother's womb. And they remained really, really high for the first 12 years of her life. Now, as we explored the emotional events that took place, what we discovered was that her father passed away whilst she was in utero. So the father died. Now, that experience is traumatic for the mother. But whatever the mother experiences, the child in utero also experiences to almost the exact same extent. So when the father passed away, he was the breadwinner. So when the child was born, it was born into a world of scarcity. Mm. We don't have enough income. You're going to have to go live with your grandparents. Mum's got to go to work. We have no provider in our life. You can't have those shoes. You can't go to the nice schools. Every dollar earned, we're going to save. A penny saved is a penny earned. All these things.
Yes.
And so for the first 12 years of her life until the mother got remarried, they went through a financial crisis. And that storm was there for 12 years. Now, in those first 7 years of our life, we go through what's called an imprint period. Yep. And whatever's happening in the outer world is imprinted onto our mind and body. So all of these financial fears, all of these financial limiting beliefs that she's hearing from the mother are being impressed upon her. Now, by the age of 12, we lock in our financial values. We lock in our values and rules of how we're going to live our life. So her rules of life are there's not enough money.
Yeah.
It can be taken away from you. You got to provide for yourself. You got to save it. You got to save it for a rainy day. And so she always struggled financially. So as she gets into her 50s, she starts to have new goals. And she says, I don't want to work anymore. I want to be self-employed. But that thought triggers the fears.
Yes.
What if I leave and I lose my financial security? I'm single, no carer to provide for me, no husband in my life. I don't want to have happened what happened to my mother. Mm-hmm. So I'm better off to stay in this career. And once you become aware of that, and you know, emotional intelligence has five factors. The first part is self-awareness. Once you can understand why you think and feel the way that you do, you can then do the second thing, which is to regulate those thoughts and feelings and to realize that these rules in life aren't working for you.
Yes.
And then through the process of coaching, not by magic or voodoo, you've got to reprogram your mind. And a part of that is things like affirmations, but it's also doing deeper work and removing all of those fears.
Yeah.
And so in the spirit of Mind Explorer, it's getting that awareness. And in medicine, they say accurate diagnosis is half the cure. And if you say that's exactly where those fears are coming from and you only have to work on that, then you're halfway to your goal. See, her problem wasn't skill and it wasn't knowledge. She's already making great money. It's the fears that stop her from doing what she truly wants, which is the problem.
Yeah. Wow. You know, when you get to a point where you almost want to finish something so you can go and start something else? Which is incredibly rude because this is really, really good stuff. But I want to find out about myself. Oh, and I do like that. We'll make sure that the web link is in there. That's incredible stuff. That's incredible stuff. I am just going to have to do that, you know, sometime later today.
I'll sponsor you. It'll be my gift to you.
Bless you. I'll accept. I'll accept. I'm happy to accept. And that's another thing. People, you know, if you were offered something, just accept it. You know, somebody says, oh, I'm going to pay in a restaurant. I don't have a row about it. It's like, okay. It's like, you've got your reasons why you want to do it. I'm not going to embarrass you or challenge you about why you want to do that. So thank you very much for that. I'll accept. Well, honestly, we could talk all day. I want to goal setting. How do you do it? Have you got a big, hairy, audacious goal that you've got that you're working on at the moment? And you know, what are your principles behind goals and goal setting?
One of my big, hairy, audacious goals I'm living right now. And sometimes I've got to wake myself up and pinch myself and remind myself that this is the dream. This is what you wanted. This is what you asked for. So it all started in 2008 and I was living in Dubai and my flatmate, he said, hey, you got to read this book. And I said, what is it? He said, it's the 4-hour work week.
Mm-hmm.
I said, don't give me any of that shit. I said, 4 hours? I don't believe it. Anyway, I read the book with an open mind. The words of Timothy Ferris really resonated with me. And I thought to myself, you know what? If I could build a business and live in Asia and earn American dollars or British pounds, sterling, or Australian dollars, I could have 3, 4, or 5 times the lifestyle living here in Asia. And so I started to take a deep dive into that book, and I started to learn the principles of outsourcing and getting virtual assistants, like I'm sure you're using. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, well, if I could just get my income from $50 to an $80 an hour, and if I could just get it from $80 to maybe $200 an hour, and I could do 4 hours of coaching per week, I'd be earning $1,000.
Yeah.
And if I lived in Asia, that'd be the same as earning $5,000 a week in Australia or America.
Yeah.
So I started to think to myself, who do I have to become to be able to do this? So I started with a big picture. And the picture was me living in Asia, cashing Australian dollars and living a very lavish lifestyle where I didn't have to grind away 40 and 50 and 60 hours a week. And so whilst I was working, I took every single course that Emirates Airline would offer me. I studied critical incident stress management. I studied peer support. I studied leadership. And I did all their certification courses. And I ended up co-leading a team of 17,500 cabin crew for Emirates. So I got all this wonderful skill about leadership and management. And then I left. And then I moved to Asia. And I spent about $80,000 in the first year of my business and nothing worked.
Yeah.
But what I did learn is I learned what didn't work. Yeah. And so I didn't really lose anything. I gained a lot. By the end of the year, I'd lost all of my money and I was on social security with the Australian government, living in the spare room in my grandmother's house. So I thought it was going to work. But I also knew that you have to try many, many different things. So the goal remains the same. The strategies and the way that you approach the goal has to change. So it probably took me about 4 or 5 years to dial it in. And then after about the fourth or fifth year, I started to live life on my terms. Yep. I've been living in Taiwan. I've been flying around the world. I've had more than 20,000 clients through my programs. I've delivered more than 10,000 scientific case studies. My clients, one of them alone, made 138 million ringgits for Microsoft during the pandemic. And through the whole pandemic, I got to live in Taiwan, a place that I call home.
Yeah.
So since 2012, I've been living that dream every single day. And it is really possible. But one thing that people must remember is you've got to be willing to take the hits. You've got to be willing to go through the losses. You've got to be willing to go through the trials, the errors, until you dial in your formula.
Yeah.
And then once you dial it in, then you've just got to stick to it and make sure you do what is necessary to maintain the goal. Because there's three things. It's easy to set a goal. It's easy to quit on a goal, but it's very hard to maintain the goal. And once you get it, you've got to remember that maintenance is also a goal. And you should be very proud that you can maintain a particular lifestyle. You can maintain a certain level of income. Remember, that's also important. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of things that I think are really important with your big, hairy, audacious goals.
Maintaining the goal. You know, a lot of people don't think about that. You know, it's just, you know, the end thing. But when you get there, it's like, because there is winner's remorse, isn't there? You know, now what, when you've achieved a goal? So I think maintaining the goal and picking it up and continuing it, that's a very, very useful point. Very useful.
It's like your weight. Sometimes just maintaining the weight of your body is a goal. I know for me, I was 98 kilos, 99 kilos when I was 18. I'm the same weight now. And I've successfully maintained it for 20 years, but I've got to do the work. I've got to get up. I've got to go to the gym. I've got to do the battle ropes. I've got to be mindful of what I eat. But if I can maintain that, that is a form of success. And I think today with, you know, these 10X goals, these big goals, people forget that maintenance is a goal. Mm-hmm. I used to be in real estate. Anybody can buy a house. Really, you can get money cheap from the bank. Still, at this stage, my parents, they bought a house and the interest rate was 18%. It's still low in comparison to that.
Yeah.
You can borrow money against your family's home and you can get into a home really cheap. But the problem is, once you get the home, can you maintain it? When the garage door breaks, can you replace it? When the windows smash, can you afford to replace them? When the roof gets a leak, can you afford to live in the house? Most people can't maintain the home. And so they exit and they sell. So it's easy to buy a house. It's easy to sell a house. But can you successfully stay in that house for 30 years and pay it off and own it after 30 years? That's a form of success. And if you've got a job and you're happy and you've got the income that you desire, now maintain it for 20 or 30 years. That's success.
Yeah.
We can't forget that.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. Right. So I'm going to have to bring this to an end, which I don't want to do. I really don't want to do this, but I'd like to
have more time together.
We will. We'll make sure that, you know, we come back round on this. That's definitely going to happen. But Daniel, I need, before we go, Daniel Tolson, goal setting nugget, golden nugget that we haven't touched on before that the world needs to know?
Well, sometimes in business, we're just going to get really brilliant at the basics. And if you think about your goals and remember the SMART formula, you got to make that work for you. Your goals should be simple, and they should be so simply written down on a piece of paper that a 10-year-old can understand your goal. If a 10-year-old can't understand your goal, your unconscious mind can't understand your goal. And the reason why that's important is because the conscious mind is the goal setter, but the unconscious mind is the goal getter. So you've got to write that goal in a way that's so simple that your 10-year-old unconscious mind can understand and act upon.
Yeah, love it.
The goal's also got to be meaningful. If you're not licking your lips, if your heart's not beating when you set that goal, choose something else. The goal's also got to be achievable. And if you're starting your journey of goal setting, the very first goal that you set should have a 100% success rate, meaning that you will achieve it absolutely the first time. And then after you've achieved the first one, then you adjust the failure rate. So you have a 99% success rate and a 1% failure rate. And you've got to build that emotional muscle up. You've got to build that confidence up with your goal setting. You've got to do that. Your goal also has to be realistic for you. Realistic for you, all things considered, based on your knowledge, based on your skill, based on your attitude, based on where you're starting from today. Don't set yourself up for failure. Set yourself up for success. Be realistic. And thirdly, make sure you give yourself enough time. If you think the goal is going to take you a year to achieve, make sure you set enough time for 3 months of trial and error and give yourself 15 months to achieve the goal. Always add an extra 30% buffer and you'll never, ever be disappointed. That's my advice.
Fabulous advice. Perfect. Perfect way to end this week's episode. I'm so glad we connected. I have no idea how we connected. Somebody must have recommended us but you know, it's been a blessing, I have to say. Daniel, thank you so much for joining me on the Goals Do Come True podcast. We're going to stay in touch for sure. I'm going to follow you. I'm going to find out what's going on in my head and what's gone on in my heart with the Mind Report. We're going to make sure that the links to that are contained in the show notes and also below the live recording here today. Daniel Tolson, amazing. Thank you very much indeed.
Doug, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Goals Do Come True. I'm Doug Bennett, the Goals Guy. Please remember to subscribe and review on Apple, Google, or Spotify. Visit dougbennett.co.uk for the latest on transforming your life through goals. Happy goal setting. Until next time.